The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 419 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. We have a jam-packed show. We have a lot to get to. The Western Conference Finals come down to a Game 7 at Oracle Arena. That place is going to be rocking tonight. My prediction is on the way. Plus, a look back at one of the best shooting displays you will ever see. Ever. Klay Thompson was on fire in Game 6. The man had a career night in a must-win spot. Now that is the definition of clutch. The Stanley Cup Final gets underway tonight. I'm sure NHL executives aren't thrilled about going head-to-head with Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, but hey, that's life. You know, the NHL suits were pulling for OKC Saturday night to avoid a Game 7 tonight. I think this will be an exciting matchup between the Penguins and the Sharks. We have two very fast hockey teams who can put the puck in the back of the net at any time. I'm hoping for a track meet. Lots of end-to-end action. And I'll tell you who I like coming up in a bit. Chase Utley continues to haunt the New York Mets. Noah Syndergaard was ejected for throwing a pitch behind Utley. That's right, it didn't even hit him. Then Utley ends up hitting not one but two home runs, including a grand slam. Talk about a miserable night for Mets fans. Just a brutal decision by the home plate umpire in that game Saturday. Much more on this coming up later in the show. And more than 350,000 fans came out for the 100th run into the Indy 500. The man who took the checkered flag was a huge underdog, and his car ended up being towed to Victory Lane. That's right, I'll explain coming up. Sunday was like New Year's Eve for racing fans, right? You had the Indy 500, and then at night, the Coca-Cola 600. That's an awful lot of left turns. But I'll keep you posted on both races a little bit later in the show. This is the Memorial Day edition of the Sports Report podcast, and certainly we remember the reason for this holiday. It's great to, you know, go out and have burgers and hot dogs and a few cold beverages, or hit the pool, have a picnic, whatever. But we should remember the reason for the Memorial Day holiday and remember those who paid the ultimate price, made the ultimate sacrifice, and put their lives on the line to serve our country and all branches of the armed forces. So certainly we remember those. And I always like to think about the men and women currently serving in the armed forces. So a tip of the cap to all of those fine men and women. A lot to get to. We will start with hoops. We know the Cavaliers are in the NBA Finals. They destroyed the Raptors 113-87 in Toronto to close out that series in six games. It seems like we've had one blowout after another in the NBA playoffs. Had a good one over the weekend out west, but man, a lot of blow. 113-87? That's a decisive game in the Eastern Conference Finals? It's a 26-point game. Jeez. LeBron is going to the finals again. 6 years in a row, LeBron James has been the NBA Finals. You don't hear as much from the LeBron haters. We used to hear from them all the time, and it would just drive me nuts. Listen, you don't have to be a fan of the Cavaliers or when he played for Miami. That's fine, but don't sit there and tell me that the guy isn't a Hall of Fame player. I mean, he's one of the greats to ever play the game. Whether you like him or not, he is. That's just plain fact. LeBron went for 33 in the clincher versus the Raptors. Kyrie Irving had 30. Kevin Love, a double-double, 20 points, 12 rebounds. And unlike last year, when the Cavs lost to the Warriors in six games, the Big Three is healthy right now, and they will be well rested for Game 1. They haven't played since Friday. As for Cleveland's opponent, well, that'll be decided tonight. Game 7, Oklahoma City at Golden State. I can't wait, and I'm sure you agree. How entertaining was Saturday night's game at Oklahoma City? I mean, that was an instant classic. We witnessed history. Klay Thompson put on one of the great shooting clinics of all time, and he did it on the road in the Western Conference Finals in a must-win game against a very good team. That is money. He made a playoff record 11 three-pointers. The man could not miss. I'll give you the numbers coming up. It's phenomenal. The Thunder led this one 89-81 with 8.5 minutes to go, but were not able to seal the deal. The Splash Brothers put on quite a show, and OKC folded down the stretch. Turnover after turnover after turnover in that fourth quarter. How about the three from the top of the key that Thompson drained with 5 minutes left? I mean, that baby was really deep. He was out there. He was getting close to midcourt when he drained that one. Golden State was down 7 at the time. Thompson also hit the tie-breaking three with 1.5 minutes to play. And then Steph Curry followed up with a tough little floater off the glass with 14 seconds remaining to put the Warriors up 5. OKC failed to execute late in the game. They ended up losing this one 108-101. It was a stunner. And I wasn't shocked that the Warriors won. I mean, they were the best team in the NBA over the course of the regular season. So I wasn't stunned by that. But it was how it went down, how they did it with three ball after three ball after three ball. I mean, it was raining three-pointers. Listen to these numbers. Klay Thompson, 11 of 18 from three, 41 points, 19 in the fourth quarter. Steph Curry, who started the game slow but then really picked it up, he almost had a triple-double in this game. 31 points, 10 rebounds, and 9 assists for Steph Curry, and he was 6 of 13 from three-point land. As a team, the Warriors were 21 of 44 from downtown. That is 48% from three-point range. Meanwhile, the Thunder shot a dismal 3 of 23 from deep. That's 13%. So Golden State made 18 more threes. That's plus 54 in that department. You know, thinking back on it, it is amazing when you consider that 18 more threes. It's amazing that OKC was as close as they were. Kevin Durant had 29, Russell Westbrook 28 points, but you have to dig a little bit deep. You have to get inside the numbers here. Neither player was efficient. I'm big on efficiency. Durant, 10 of 31. Really bad shooting night for KD. And Westbrook, 10 of 27. So he didn't shoot it well either. That was Oklahoma City's shot. That was the chance to knock the king off the hill, and they couldn't close. The ABCs, always be closing. Up 8 in the fourth quarter at home, you need to get that game. And the way they finished it up, 6 turnovers in the last 3 minutes. The fourth quarter was 33-18 in favor of Golden State. Wow. Now, the Warriors try to become just the 10th team in NBA history to come back from a 3-1 series deficit. And I think they will get it done at home tonight. Las Vegas has made the Warriors a 7-point favorite. I wonder where OKC is mentally. After blowing a closeout game in that fashion at home, they have to be thinking, we had our shot and we blew it. We let it slip away. Of course, they'll never, ever admit that. You know, they're not going to say that in any interviews. They'll say they've moved beyond it. Sure. It has to be in the back of their minds. Has to be. So I'm picking Golden State in Game 7 at home. I want to know who you like. Let me know on Twitter, @TheSports, RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. Game 7, Oklahoma City at Golden State. Who are you picking? I'm going with Golden State here. Let me know who you like. You get them on Twitter at the Sports RPT. We are just getting warmed up. We have more hoops to talk about. The Stanley Cup Final. Little baseball, Mets, Dodgers, Syndergaard, Utley, Indy 500, Coca-Cola 600. I told you, a jam-packed show here on episode number 419, the Memorial Day edition of the Sports Report podcast. And we are brought to you by our great sponsor, iHome. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof. They are rust-proof. They are military standard shockproof. They're tough. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. Go to iHomeAudio.com, look at all their great products. You can also check out their apps and accessories. iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. iHomeAudio.com. The sound quality cannot be beat. And their products look really cool too. Really sharp stuff. And the sound technology is brilliant. The website again, iHomeAudio.com. I was doing some shopping over the weekend with my brother. He was up from Richmond, Virginia. My sister was in town with my nephew. So got to spend a lot of time with the family. That's always fun, doing a little shopping for my nephew. He's going to be 7 coming up here in a couple of weeks. So he's all into Star Wars and Legos and things like that. And as we were shopping, we're at a Toys R Us. Right up front, big iHome display. A lot of cool stuff right there. Again, the website, iHomeAudio.com. We continue with the NBA. I want to tell you, team to keep your eye on as the draft approaches, the Philadelphia 76ers, the team in my backyard. Sources told ESPN that the Sixers are increasingly likely to move Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, at least one of them in conjunction with the draft. Brian Colangelo, who's now in charge of personnel, he is known to be aggressive, and he said that, quote, everybody's thinking about winning as opposed to prolonging the rebuilding process. You know, we heard so much about the process when Sam Hinkie was in charge. He's done now. Colangelo takes over, and it seems like they want to start winning now. Enough with tanking each and every season. Now, you have the number one overall pick already, and that'll be either Ben Simmons from LSU, who I think is getting a bad rap from some people. I watch a ton of college basketball. That team had no chemistry. There was a lot going on there that I didn't like. Just, they didn't seem to fit together. It was an odd mix of, you know, older players and then Simmons coming in with all that talent. And we're really running the show as a point forward. I mean, you've heard that term before. He truly is a point forward. But, you know, people are ripping this kid. I think he's going to be a really, really good pro. And then you have Duke's Brandon Ingram, who's a much better shooter. You know, that's the area that Ben Simmons really has to work on, is shooting. But as far as handling the ball, rebounding, scoring, the court vision, the basketball IQ, Simmons has that. Ingram is the better shooter, needs to get stronger, really, really thin. So the Sixers have the first overall pick. The question now is, do they deal an Okafor or a Noel to move up and try and get another really high draft pick? And I want to touch on something else here. The Sixers have got themselves in a little bit of a jam because of the best player available theory. And when you do that, you end up with centers out the wazoo. I mean, you have Okafor, you have Noel, you have Embiid, they have Saric, who plays the power forward position. He's overseas. He may come back for next season. And this is a small ball league. Look at all the threes that you saw being jacked up there by Oklahoma City and Golden State, even Cleveland and Toronto in the Eastern Finals. So it's a different type of game. And with the best player available theory, they end up with a log jam at the power forward center position. I have always said, regardless of sport, you must consider position. And finally, Brett Brown, the head coach of the 76ers, has said that this offseason, that with this draft and the number one overall pick, they have to consider position. Finally, somebody agrees with me. Now, as for trade partners, the Celtics have the third pick. And if you get up there, you know, maybe you get a Chris Dunn, point guard from Providence, Jamal Murray, shooting guard from Kentucky. I'm a big fan of Chris Dunn. I think he's got an NBA body. I think he's got an NBA game right now. And they desperately need help at the guard spot. You know, I think you need that point guard, the coach on the floor general to run the show. So just something to keep an eye on as we get closer to the NBA draft, which is June 23rd. Will the Sixers make a move with Brian Colangelo in charge now to try and get another high pick in addition to number one? And I do think they're going to take Ben Simmons. I know some like Ingram, but I think that they'll go with Simmons. Hockey fans are pumped up, not just Hoops fans. The fans of Pinball on Ice, they are set. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final, San Jose at Pittsburgh tonight in what is expected to be a very fast-paced series with plenty of action. Both these teams have a lot of speed, a lot of skill. There should not be a lot of clutching and grabbing and mucking it up. These squads should be getting up and down the ice in a hurry. San Jose is in the Stanley Cup Final for the first time in franchise history. 24 years. They're finally here. Pittsburgh was here last in 2009, and that season the Penguins did win it all. The coaching change this season from Mike Johnston to Mike Sullivan has made a gigantic difference in Pittsburgh. Ever since that happened, which was back in December, the Penguins just came alive offensively. I mean, they're scoring goals left and right. It's like a new team in the Steel City. Only Washington scored more goals in the Eastern Conference than Pittsburgh. Here's how they got here. Impressive roads for both of these teams. Pittsburgh beat the Rangers in five, then the Caps in six, and then the Lightning in seven. The Sharks got by the Kings in five, then the Predators in seven. That was a great series. And then the Blues in six games. As I mentioned, both teams are highly skilled. You have Crosby, you have Malkin, you have Kessel for Pittsburgh. What a move that was, picking him up. And then for San Jose, you have Pavelski, you have Couture, you have Burns, and veterans like Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. You have to feel good for them. These are players that have been with the Sharks for a long, long, long time, never got to the final, and now they're here. So that's a big storyline. You'll hear a lot about that over the course of this series. One of the big keys to me, Pittsburgh's got to stay out of the penalty box. The Sharks have an outstanding power play, and the Penguins simply cannot be taking dumb penalties. As for the goalies, it looks like a wash. They're looking to make a name for themselves. Matt Murray is a 22-year-old rookie. This guy spent a lot of time in the AHL this season. He did not start Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals against Tampa Bay. Sullivan turned to the veteran Marc-Andre Fleury. Pittsburgh lost that game. And then Sullivan went back to Murray. And the Penguins won Games 6 and 7 to advance. And Game 7 was a nail-biter. That was a 2-1 final score. So no doubt Murray is the man between the pipes. He may be a rookie, maybe 22, but he's going to be the guy now. San Jose has 26-year-old Martin Jones in goal. He was the Kings' backup when LA won the Cup in 2014. His numbers are very similar to Murray's. They both have played very, very well, and I think they're going to be tested time and time again in this series when you look at the skill that's out there. It's a 2-2-1-1-1 format, which I think is best. I think that's the best way to go. I'm not a fan of the 2-3-2. Game 2 is going to be Wednesday in Pittsburgh, and then they'll head out west. Game 3 is Saturday at San Jose, And game four is next Monday to set the table for you here. If it goes a full seven games, the series won't end until Wednesday, June 15th. That's right. Middle of June. We're still in May. Almost 2.5 weeks to play this series if it goes the distance. Well, it is prediction time now, my friends. Drumroll provided by you. And I'm going to take the Penguins in seven. I think it's a long series. This Penguins group was plus 42 in goal differential during the regular season. Plus 42. Only the Capitals were better in that category. When it comes to talent, it's tough to go against the 1-2 punch of Crosby and Malkin. This should be a fun series with loads of scoring chances. Even if you're not a diehard hockey fan, I think you got to tune into this. I give a slight edge to Pittsburgh. Slight edge. Who do you like? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Are you going with the Penguins? I say Pittsburgh in seven. Or are you going with the Sharks? And you can make a case for both teams. I think, again, the goaltender position, a wash, young guys in there, not a whole lot of experience coming into the postseason with Murray, no experience at all. And offensively, you have really, really talented teams. So who do you like, the Pens or the Sharks? I'm on Twitter at the Sports RPT. We march on here on episode number 419 of the Sports Report podcast. New shows every Monday. You can find me in the podcast section of iTunes. Just search for the Sports Report with Paul Roberts. And of course on the Grizz, that is grizzlyproductions.tv. A lot of racing to get to with the Indy 500, the Coca-Cola 600. First, some baseball. Dodgers in New York this weekend to take on the Mets. A lot of speculation that Chase Utley was going to get drilled for his infamous slide during the NLDS last year that broke Ruben Tejada's right leg. So fast forward to the third inning Saturday night. The game's on Fox. Noah Syndergaard on the mound. Primetime TV in the Big Apple versus the Dodgers. Two major market clubs here for May. This was an intriguing game. Syndergaard, who throws as hard as anybody. I mean, this guy is constantly 97, 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. He can rush it up there. Well, he lets a fastball go that ends up behind Chase Utley. Did not hit him. Wasn't really that close. It wasn't like Utley had to jump out of the way. The home plate umpire, Adam Hamari, decides to eject Syndergaard. Right then and there, tosses the big right-hander, gone. Third inning of a game that was scoreless at the time after a pitch that missed Utley, did not hit him. I have no clue what Hamari is doing in that spot. He should have known that there's a history, Utley and the Mets, and realize something may go down. But when the pitch misses him, you can't eject Syndergaard there. You can't throw him out in that situation. What he should have done, what he could have done, is issue a warning. And then you cover your bases. If the next pitch is thrown at Utley, whether it hits him or not, then Syndergaard is gone. And I have no gripe. I'm not screaming and yelling. You don't get a Roberts rant like you're getting right now. But it misses him, and you throw him out. That is a terrible, awful job by the home plate umpire of not having even a little understanding, a little common sense regarding the situation. Just clueless. It got even worse for Mets fans. They had to watch Utley go on and hit two home runs, including a slam. The Dodgers won the game 9-1. They outhit the Mets 14-3. Terry Collins also got tossed, and I can't blame the guy. Utley and the Dodgers got the last laugh. Utley is just a Mets killer. He's got 38 career home runs against the Mets. I thought his slide last year was Bush League. I do. Major League Baseball changed the rule. We all know about that. He slid way late. And Utley is not a dirty player. Saw him a lot in Philadelphia. He's not a bad guy. He's well-respected. He plays the game the right way. He runs out every routine ground ball. He plays hard. He's not dirty. But in that particular situation, I thought he was wrong. I thought he made a mistake there. And as a result, Ruben Tejada's leg was broken. So Major League Baseball has changed some things there. So, you know, we don't have to go back on what happened last year in the playoffs. I thought Utley was wrong. The question is, do you think Noah Syndergaard should have been ejected? I say, heck no. No way, no how, no chance. Just a bad job there by the home plate umpire. Let me know what you think on Twitter at the Sports RPT. Sunday was a gigantic day for racing fans, and I'm your typical football, basketball, baseball type of guy. Of course, I'm into the NHL playoffs. Racing, just not my cup of tea. Racing's one of those things you're either really into it or not at all. There's usually not a whole lot of middle ground. I'm not into it, but the Indy 500 is a special event. That's Americana right there, the history. The greatest spectacle in racing is what it's called. And this year was very, very special because it was the 100th running of the Indy 500. This was the first sellout. I didn't know this. This is the first sellout in the history of the race. Over 350,000 fans were in attendance, and many left the track stunned. I watched about the last 50 laps. Joseph Newgarden, Carlos Munoz, and Tony Kanaan had three of the strongest cars. As the end of the race neared, Newgarden and Munoz were going back and forth out in front. It really looked like one of the two would win it. But, and this is a Fat Albert-sized but, some strategy came into play. The drivers in the lead, they stopped for gas. Just a quick splash, like 4 or 5 seconds, and then they were gone out of pit row, back on the track. Very, very quick stops, but they did stop to get some gas. However, one racer said, forget that. I'm not stopping for fuel. I'm going for the win. And I'm talking about American Alexander Rossi. He is the driver who ended up taking the checkered flag. Most of you probably never even heard of this guy. He was a 66-1 long shot. 66-1. Rookie from California. He's only 24 years old. Now, credit as well to Brian Herta, who is on his team, because he put this strategy in place. He was the one that was telling Rossi, you got to conserve fuel, and it paid off big time. Rossi hung on to win the Indy 500 with just enough fuel to finish the race. In fact, his Honda had to be towed to victory lane. I'm not joking. I'm serious. It was out of gas, so they had to tow it. I'm not sure. Maybe AAA will cover that bill. I have AAA Plus, so I think I'd be in good shape. But they actually had to tow it. He's the first rookie to win the Indy 500 in 15 years. After the race, Rossi said, quote, I have no idea how we pulled that off. I'll need to see a psychiatrist after this. Rossi was running on fumes on that last lap. His final lap was a mere 179.8 miles per hour. Now, that sounds like a lot, of course, to you and I. That's nothing to these drivers. That's a slow lap to these guys. Rossi's teammate, Carlos Munoz, wasn't too thrilled with the outcome. And some of the other top drivers, too, seemed a little bit miffed because of how this thing worked out. Munoz looked completely shocked at the end of the race, just devastated. I think he felt like he was going to win. And you have to know the background here. He is the runner-up for the second time in 4 years. Wasn't happy about losing because it came down to fuel. Now, I guess he felt like it should have been decided on the track there as opposed to the strategy of not taking the pit stop. Hey, if it works, it works. Great day for Andretti Autosport. Their drivers go 1-2. Michael Andretti has now won the Indy 500 four times as an owner. Earlier this month, he was voted the best driver never to win the Indy 500. Did not win it as a driver, but as an owner, he has had a ton of success. I don't think that he was expecting Alex Rossi to be drinking the milk in victory lane, but he will take it. And it just goes to show you never, ever know. Sunday night, NASCAR was on center stage, Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. One word sums up this race: domination. Listen to this. Martin Truex Jr. led. There were 400 laps in the race. He led 392 laps, set a new NASCAR record by leading 588 miles. It's a 600-mile race. He led for 588. Total domination by Truex Jr. The only time he gave up the lead was when he took a pit stop. Nobody passed him all night long. That's how fast his car was. This is Truex Jr.'s first Sprint Cup victory of the season. He had been close so many times this season, but one thing or another got in his way. Not this time. 35-year-old had never been better than fifth at Charlotte. So good for him. He's a popular driver. He's well-liked. The other guys like him. So tip of the cap to Martin Truex Jr. for winning the Coca-Cola 600. I always think NASCAR is better under the lights. I don't know why. I just think it's cooler. Kevin Harvick was second. Jimmy Johnson was third. So we got you up to date on the racing, NHL, NBA, little baseball in there. Let me know what you think about all the topics. Who wins Game 7, Golden State or Oklahoma City? Who do you like, the Penguins or the Sharks? I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. And should Syndergaard have been ejected? TheSportsRPT on Twitter. Enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day and the rest of the week, everybody. This has been episode number 419. Thanks so much for tuning in each and every Monday. Spread the word about the Sports Report podcast. I'm with you every Monday on the Grizz and, of course, in the podcast section of iTunes. I'll talk to you next Monday. This has been episode 419 on GrizzlyProductions.tv.